A cannon exploded somewhere above us, and for a split second I thought we'd all been shot. Something cracked sharply through the heavy air of the courtroom, and for a town so jittery to begin with, we all froze in one horrible snapshot of disbelief. Then Danny Padgett grunted in a delayed reaction, and all hell broke loose. Women screamed, men screamed, someone yelled, "Get down!" as half the spectators ducked low, some hitting the floor. Someone shouted, "He's been shot!" I lowered my head a few inches, but I didn't want to miss anything. Every deputy yanked out a service revolver and looked in a different direction for someone to shoot. They pointed up and down, front and back, here and there. Though we argued about it for years, the second shot was no more than 3 seconds behind the first. It hit Danny in the ribs, but it had not been necessary. The first had gone through his head. The second shot drew the attention of a deputy in the front of the courtroom. I was ducking even lower, but I saw him pointing to the balcony. The double doors to the courtroom flew open, and the stampede was on. In the hysteria that followed, I stayed in my seat and tried to take in everything. I remember seeing Lucien Wilbanks hovering over his client, and Rufus Buckley on his hands and knees scurrying in front of the jury box in an effort to escape. And I'll never forget Judge Noose sitting calmly at the bench, reading glasses perched on the tip of his nose, watching the chaos as if he saw it every week. Each second seemed to last a minute. The shots that hit Danny were fired from the ceiling above the balcony. And though the balcony was filled with people, no one saw the rifle drop down a few inches, 10 feet above their heads. Like the rest of us, they were preoccupied with getting a first glance at Danny Padgett. The county had patched and renovated the courtroom at various times over the decades, whenever a few spare bucks could be squeezed from the coffers. Back in the late 60s, in an effort to improve the lighting, a dropped ceiling had been installed. The sniper found the perfect spot on a heating duct just above a panel in the ceiling. There in the dark crawl space, he waited patiently, watching the courtroom below through a 5-inch slit he'd created by lifting one of the water-stained panels. When I thought the shooting was over, I crept closer to the bar. The cops were yelling for everybody to get out of the courtroom. They were shoving people and barking all sorts of contradictory instructions. Danny was under the table, attended to by Lucien and several deputies. I could see his feet, and they were not moving. A minute or two passed, and the confusion was subsiding. Suddenly, there was more gunfire. Thankfully, now it was outside. I looked out a courtroom window and saw people scampering into the stores around the square. I saw an old man point upward, sort of above my head, to something on top of the courthouse. Sheriff McNatt had just found the crawl space when he heard shots above him. He and two deputies climbed the stairs to the third floor, then slowly took the cramped circular stairway through the dome. The door to the cupola was jammed shut, but just above it they could hear the anxious footsteps of the sniper, and they could hear shell casings hit the floor. His only target was the law offices of Lucien Wilbanks, specifically the upstairs windows. With great deliberation, he was blowing them out, one by one. Downstairs, Ethel Twitty was under her desk, bawling and screaming at the same time. I finally left the courtroom and hustled downstairs to the main floor, where the crowd was waiting, uncertain what to do. The police chief was telling everyone to stay inside. Between bursts of gunfire, the chatter was fast and nervous. When the shooting started, we gawked at one another. Each one of us was thinking, how long will this go on? I huddled with the Ruffin family. Miss Callie had fainted when the first shot jolted the courtroom. Max and Bobby were clutching her, anxious to get her home. After holding the town hostage for an hour, the sniper ran out of ammunition. He saved the last bullet for himself, and when he pulled the trigger, he fell hard on the small passage door in the floor of the cupola. Sheriff McNatt waited a few minutes, then managed to shove the door up and open. The body of Hank Hooten was naked again, and as dead as fresh roadkill. A deputy ran down the stairs and yelled, It's over. He's dead. It's Hank Hooten. The bewildered expressions were almost amusing. Hank Hooten? Everyone said the name, but no words came out. Hank Hooten? That lawyer who went crazy? I thought he got sent away. Isn't he in Whitfield? Thought he was dead. Who's Hank Hooten? Carlotta asked me, but I was too confused to give an answer. We spilled outside under the shade trees and lingered for a while, not certain whether we should stay in case there was another incredible event, or go home and try to comprehend the one we'd just lived through. The Ruffin clan left quickly. Miss Callie was not feeling well. Eventually, an ambulance carrying Danny Paget pulled away from the courthouse and left in no hurry whatsoever. The removal of Hank Hooten was a bit more demanding, but with time they wrestled down his corpse, then rolled it out of the courthouse on a gurney, covered from head to toe with a white sheet. I walked to my office where Margaret and Wiley were sipping fresh coffee and waiting for me. We were too stunned to engage in intelligent conversation. The entire town was muted. I eventually made some phone calls, found who I wanted, and around noon left the office. As I drove around the square, I saw Mr. Dex Pratt, who owned the local glass company and ran an ad in the Times every week, on the balcony at Lucian's, already removing the French doors and replacing panes. I was sure Lucian was home by then, already hitting the sauce on his porch, from where he could see the dome and the cupola of the courthouse. Whitfield was 3 hours to the south. I wasn't sure if I would make it that far, because at any moment I was likely to turn right, head west, cross the river at Greenville or Vicksburg, and be somewhere deep in Texas by dusk, or take a left, head east, and find a very late dinner somewhere close to Atlanta. What madness! How did such a pleasant little town end up in such a nightmare? I just wanted out. I was near Jackson before I came out of my trance.